Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all these skills to address the subject that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Hey, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I am doing wonderfully today. I have the music in me today.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm always excited when we have a music-centric topic to explore because you may not know this, but my initial radio experience was as an actual top 40 DJ.
Okay, nice. I was doing AAA radio, but yeah, I was not top 40. But
so I think you're younger than me. So there's this thing about music, and I grew up around music. Here's another little side note. My parents, when they first got married, owned a record store in upstate New York. And so I spent a part of my infancy hanging out on the counter of my parents' record store. And the college kids would come by and dance with my mom, who is a groovy dancer still to this day. My mother did the splits at her 75th birthday party.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I got the music in me.
Well, you know, it's been a fun journey doing this show with you. Today is actually my year-iversary here.
And so
I've been able to learn a little bit about your music throughout. And I kind of already know things, some of your favorites. And
we've got a thing. We've got a one-year anniversary.
We sure do.
I love that. Welcome.
Well, where are we off to today?
All right. So, you know, looking back over our lives, and especially if you talk to elderly people, when they start looking back over their lives and all the twists and turns and things that they experienced, most often they will say, I have no regrets. You know, no matter how many things that happened, no matter how many things that they experienced that were soul crushing or overwhelming, they look back on their lives and say, you know, I wouldn't change any of them. Because if I change any of the events of my life, it would have changed the course of history and ultimately my destination. And so I've always found that fascinating, you know, that people can live through the most horrific of situations or challenging of situations or most amazing situations and come through it and realize, you know, this made me who I am today. This seminal moment is why I am who I am today. And so it got me thinking about all of our lives and all of our stories. And can you recall, you just talked about our friendiversary and meeting a year ago. What are those markers in your life that changed you, that had a seminal experience on who you are today? You know, what were those milestones that helped you define who you are today? And quite often, those seminal moments, those milestones, those markers are around really tragic events that shape us in ways that we end up growing from and developing a deeper sense of who we are in connection to the world. So today, I want you to think about if you can remember those seminal moments and how they changed you and how looking back on your life, you may not have any regrets for choices you made or things that happened or experiences that you went through because all of them brought you to where you are today. And so along with that thought, through great twists of synchronicity or fate or just intuitiveness, I was able to meet my guest who is here today in the studio with us. He's 39 years old. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. 39 years old. And he's actually lived more lifetimes than most people twice his age. Fascinating lifetimes. And meeting Chris Beeland reminded me that everyone has a story to share. Everyone. You may look at people and judge them by how they look or how they appear or by the work they're doing or who they're keeping company with. You might think you have a sense of who they are, but more often than not, if you really sit down and talk to someone, you're going to be surprised by the depth of the story that all of us have to share. And then in sitting and speaking with someone and taking the time to hear their story, more often than not, you're going to be inspired in ways that you never expected. So I had a chance to sit down and have a cup of coffee with Chris, and in hearing his story as a singer, as a songwriter, as a storyteller, as a father, as a husband, and a grandfather, and let us remember he's 39 years old, I thought I could sit for hours with my new friend and probably not scratch the surface of all the stories. So I said, you know what? We need to come and share some of these stories on the air. So Chris, thank you for coming into the studio.
Well, it's an honor to be here, Elizabeth. Thank you.
So I'm looking forward to this next hour because we're going to explore Chris's life story through the songs that he's created at different times throughout his life and the songs that he's created in reflecting upon his life and where he is today, and just kind of share his journey. And we'll also open up the phone lines because I'd love to hear about some of those seminal moments that shaped your life. Some things that you thought you could never live through, and yet you did, and brought you to the place that you are today. So I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you'll be invited to be part of the conversation by calling us at 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation by finding me on our Facebook page or following us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org, or if you'd like, subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts. Hit subscribe. The shows will be put up into your device, and you can listen at your convenience. But any way you participate, we're happy to have you here for the conversation today. And I think we'll kick things off with a tune from one of Chris's CDs.
Up to your door, don't you know? Waiting out here in the rain, it's so cold. I do a lot of thinking, and I think it's time to change. Only this poor boy lasts so long in the rain. And I need something besides this cold, hard ground. So come on, my sweet love, don't let me down. If love's gotta fight, love's gotta fight it all, then don't you know my love could break your fall.
That's Chris Beelen, Love Gotta Fight. And I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Chris, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start off with that song. Where did it come from? What's the seminal moment in the backstory of this song?
I injured my back in about 2008, and I was on bed rest. And the doctor said, like, just for a month, you need to just lay down, not do anything. And it was in Bend, Oregon, when it was nice weather out, and there's only a few months where you get those. And so I was doing this alternate tuning on my guitar, and then I wrote a bunch of songs with that tuning. And so, that's where that song kind of just came out of being on bed rest. But love has got to fight. You got to keep going.
That's right. Even when you're knocked down, you got to keep moving forward, which seems to be, it would be a mantra for you or a theme to your life.
True. Yeah.
So let's start off a little bit with the early Chris Beelen. You're native of the Central Coast.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
And so where does your story launch off? Where does the story begin for you?
Well, I grew up in Orchid, which not many people know where that is. And so I grew up living there and in Santa Maria. And my mom divorced my stepdad when I was 12. And when they divorced, my mom kind of moved around a lot in Santa Maria. So I was always the new kid in school. I went to, I think, 4 different junior highs.
And over the course of 1 year?
2 years? 2 years, yeah. And I got into a lot of trouble in junior high. I was playing drums in a punk band, and we used to just ditch school and go smoke pot and play music in the garage. And that was kind of my start. That's where the story starts.
And so music was kind of always part of your life.
Yeah.
Kind of an outlet in some sorts.
Yeah.
And so what happened when you were about 15 years old, when you were in high school and not really enjoying high school?
I ended up getting my girlfriend pregnant, and I decided it was a good idea to ask her to marry me, because I thought that's what you might as well. and we got married. And so I dropped out of high school as a freshman, and went to work for her dad, who built flight simulators. And I tried to do continuation. I went to Delta. It was like another like a continuation school in Orchid. But things just went downhill really fast. She ended up with somebody else, and then I was homeless. And then there was really nowhere to go, and I ended up going to a rehab.
Yeah. And did you find your way there to the rehab? And it wasn't in Santa Maria, because I don't think we have any sort of like boys' homes or rehabs in the Central Coast.
Well, it was a Victory Outreach.
Okay.
So it was a men's home, but you have to be 18 and older, and I was 16. And so, I went into this rehab, and they gave me an option to go to San Diego to a youth home. So everyone there was like 17, I think it's 16 through 18. And these kids were fresh out of juvenile hall. They already had tattoos. And so, yeah, so it was a completely different environment. I was the only Caucasian. And it was mostly like a Hispanic, black church. And so I learned a lot about that culture. And it was good for me. It taught me how to get up early in the morning and go to work and good ethics. There's also some stuff that I had to like shake off of me. I'm still shaking off of me of some dogma, but whatever.
Because it was a strong religious community, I would imagine, around Victory Outreach. And and so when you found yourself, you finished, I guess, is there a graduation? Like, how did you leave the group home, the boys' home?
Yeah, it's a 6-month program. So after 6 months, they move you to, like, you have an option to move in with like an elder in the church or somebody who's, the music director, his name was Lalo Rodriguez. He had two boys that were, I think, 10 and 8, and then his wife, and they lived in a two-bedroom apartment in downtown San Diego, and I got mugged outside of my apartment. It was a crazy, but I moved in with him, and he taught me a lot about music, and I learned a lot about just family, and they didn't really have anything, but they were able to, like, just be happy and thankful, and they took me in as one of their own. So that was my next step.
And so as you kind of grew out of the, I guess I wouldn't call it transitions, from the group home into the transition of a family life, then how did you find your way back here?
Well, after a while, I had my son, who was at that time 4 years old. And I was visiting him, and but 6 hours away, and I just felt like I wanted to be closer to him and be a dad in his life. And hearing him on the phone, you know, just it broke my heart that I was far away. And I brought it up to the leaders in the church, and they said, "Well, we'll pray about it and get back to you." And so they got back to me like the next day and said, "We've prayed about it, and we feel like God doesn't want you to go back, and you should listen to us. We're your shepherds." And in the middle of the night, I was living at this house, and I just packed up my stuff. I left a note, and I just left the whole entire world behind. I never even called or anything. Just went back to Santa Maria, and by that time, my ex-wife had two kids with another guy, but still was legally married to me. And we ended up getting back together, and then all of a sudden I had this family of three.
And you're all of 19 at this point?
Barely 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to keep the timeline.
That's good.
By 19, now you found yourself you left one family in San Diego, learned about family and music, and now you are creating a family at 19 with three children.
Yeah. It was wild. So then after that, we were together for about 3 years. It was very tumultuous.
Now, as young love tends to be,
not just,
even its best
man.
Situations.
It was hard. And then I just thought that's what you had to do. It was like a prison sentence, like being in a relationship, because it was like, you know, God hates divorce and all of that.
And were you able to do music at that time? Were you creating music, or were you working and kind of keeping it together for the kids?
I was more working, and I played music in church. But even that, she got really jealous of. It was really hard for me. But music was always something I ran to. Like whenever I was just when she was off with another guy and I didn't know where she was at, like I had my guitar and I would just get alone and just sing. And so
almost like prayer. I mean, it seems like music became prayer for you.
Yeah.
Way of kind of calling out or sharing your emotions.
It was.
Because by this point, you've taken on a lot. And at one point, she left, right? You ended up being solo dad.
Yeah, she left me with a note on the door saying, "You're more responsible than I am. I don't want to tie shoes anymore." I remember specifically that being in the letter. "I don't want to tie shoes anymore. I just want to be free." And she took the car and left that, and we were staying in this house in Santa Maria. And so I had a friend who, my brother-in-law actually gave me his extra car. And I just started doing the single dad thing for a while. And I decided to have a garage sale and sell all of her stuff. I was so mad. All of her clothes. And then we ended up moving from that house. I just had to get out of that house into an apartment. And so it was me and the three boys in Santa Maria. And that went on for about 6-7 months before I even knew where she was at. And then someone told me that she was with some guy that they saw at a party, and that it was, gave me the address. Is it okay? I'm just keep talking.
Oh, I'm in. Yes.
Yeah. This is okay. This is the radio.
We're all getting to the seminal moment of music, because this is all the story, right, that builds up to who you are today.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. It's when I verbally say it, it does make me kind of trip out that I've been through all of this.
Once saying it out loud, it becomes real. It's like, this isn't just a story. This is actually my life.
Yeah. It's easier to write songs about it, I think.
Interesting.
Than to talk.
Yeah, I would imagine so, because it almost gives you some distance, right? You can talk in metaphors about the emotional experiences.
Yeah.
And I know that you spent time single dadding with the boys, and then they ended up living with their grandmother for a while, and then you kind of were left empty again. It's almost like you went from being homeless to the shelter and then the music director's home and having a family and then creating a family with your ex and the boys, and then almost they were taken away and you were back to homeless again. Not homeless, but familyless. It almost seems like every time you would get comfortable with something, it was kind of pulled out from underneath you in some way.
That's a good point. I never thought about it like that. After I lost all three of the boys, I was in a really dark space. It was around Christmas time, but I had this friend of mine who's now my wife, who checked on me, and she made sure that I was still alive and doing well. And she took me to her parents' house for Christmas. And I remember just being in this family environment, which I haven't seen in a long time, like grandparents, and everybody was just happy to be there. And I remember when I was with her, I felt this. Like she was like this angel that just came to at the perfect time. And she saved me in that sense. But I believe there was something bigger behind it, but I just,
She becomes the muse of the change. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Chris Bieland. He's a singer, a songwriter, a father, a husband, a grandfather, a spiritualist in many ways. Mm. And we're kind of walking through some of those seminal moments of Chris's life that brought him to this place of being a full-time musician. And let's take a moment. Is there a song of that time when you first met your wife, who is your angel, a muse, to your music that kind of represents where you were at that point?
Is there a song like right now to
play? Like in this moment, what comes to you?
I wasn't prepared for, but I can.
I like to catch you off guard.
I got to tune my guitar this one.
That's second. Fine. Because it seems that, you know, you talk about your life in these different stages, and I think that musical inspiration is the same way, that things have to kind of come up to you, come to you at that time, and then you're inspired to write.
Yeah, that's how it, I think that's the process.
All right, so what do we got?
As it goes, remember, love, how you and I, we walked into the park. The sky was iridescent, yeah, and the moon was the moon and filled with stars. We sang these hallelujahs, and the joy that filled our hearts was a glowing anticipation. And I gathered enough courage to ask your father for your hand. I stood there in the doorway, we stood there man to man. I told him that I love you and I'll do the best I can to give you a life and give you a family. Then I went upstairs, I sat beside your bed. Open up the Bible, the Psalms to you I read. Without a ring I asked the question, without a ring I said. Without a ring I asked this question, when you said yes, yes. You say, ooh. Going. There's one more verse.
It's just beautiful.
It's a long song, actually.
It's the story of your love.
I like to tell my
story. It's the story of your love. And so your wife, and her name is?
Annie.
Yeah. Kind of John Denver-esque, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone asks me if I know that song. I do.
So you and Annie create this family together and have children of your own.
Yes. Yeah, we have two together. And she had a son and I had my son. When we got married, and
plus the plus, two,
so plus her and then her son Eli, and then my two kids we had together, Harmony and Jude, they're like Irish twins,
close together,
yeah,
and so you've created this life in the Central Coast. You are working in the medical field, mm-hmm. and you find your way up to Bend, Oregon, for a change of scenery.
Correct.
I'm pushing your story along.
I love
that's
how you
okay.
make my story. That's nice.
I'm flowing with it. And then in Bend, when you talked about having your back injury, mm-hmm. but you also have another almost unbelievable experience in Bend. Talk about that.
Okay. well, I was drinking one night and I had enough courage to call my dad, who I thought was my dad growing up. And I haven't talked to him ever on the phone. That was the first time I heard his voice on the phone. We were talking and I just said, hey, I heard from Jason, my brother, that you don't believe I'm your son. And I just want to know if that's true or not. And he said, your mom and I were separated when she was pregnant with you. And I wanted to do a paternity test and your mom wouldn't do it, so I just always never really thought you were my son. Like, he just outright said it. And so then I told him, well, why don't we do a DNA test? And that was the first thing he ever bought for me my whole entire life. Not a Christmas card, a birthday card. He pays for the DNA test, which I'm glad. So he paid for this, and then we found out like a week later that he wasn't my dad. And which could be crushing, but no, what's really funny is my first feeling was relief. Mm. I was just like, so glad. My whole life, I've just wanted to be nothing like you. And I'm so glad I'm not related to you.
It was almost a freedom to go off.
Yeah. And then he tells me, your mom was with a Mexican fry cook named Tony. And I knew she cheated on me and blah, 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 whatever. And And I was, and that explains why I always love Mexican food. And I lived in San Diego, and I was like, that makes sense. But it turns out that it wasn't with Tony. It was my mom went to a Ricky Nelson concert in 78, and my dad was the guitar player for Ricky Nelson, and he passed a note through the crowd asking her to stay for the second set. And my mom stayed for the second set, and they had an after party, and I know too much about my conception now, which is
more than you needed to.
But I just, it was really, I'm a result of the second set. That's, I guess.
And so how did you connect with your biological dad? Because that could go horribly wrong as well.
Yeah. Well, my mom, at first, she said I wasn't with anybody. And that was the first time where I just got really mad at her. It wasn't the first time, actually, but it was one of the times I was just like, you know, you're with somebody. You're not the Virgin Mary. And we just got in this time where I wouldn't want to talk to her unless she was going to tell me the truth. And so it was, I think a month went by, and I get a phone call from her. I get a phone call, and she leaves a voicemail, and or she says to call her back, and I call her, and she said, I wish I could take a hair off of your head and do this without, because I'm not sure, but she told me the story about going to this concert, and she doesn't really remember that much. I'm thinking my dad slipped her a roofie or something as a joke. No, but she said his name's John Beeland, and she Googled him and found out that he didn't die in a plane crash with Ricky Nelson in 83.
So she had assumed that he had passed away and there was no reason this would ever come up.
I suppose.
But then she discovers he's alive.
Yeah. Yeah, so she Googles his name and then sends him an email with me playing music on it. And according to my dad's side of the story, he almost deleted it. He thought it was a spam. But he was curious and he clicked on the video, and I looked just like my grandpa. And I sing a lot like my dad and hold a guitar, and he freaked out. And all of a sudden I get a friend request on Facebook. I didn't even know it was him. Like, this is in between the silent time. And he's like, I really like your music. I'm in Australia and I produce music. I'm like, cool, thanks, man. I said something like that. And then my mom, when she said John Beeland, all of a sudden tied in like the guy on Facebook. So we did another DNA test, and it turned out that he was my dad. And then he flew in from Australia to Bend, Oregon. And it was right when I was finishing up an album. So during that time, I was recording too. And I had this album release party, and we got in front of, it's on YouTube, we got in front of like 200, 300 people and sang The Boxer, Simon and Garfunkel. And I was so hungover because the night before my dad just drank me under the table and telling me every story. It's been a whirlwind.
And that was 6 years ago.
That was 6 years ago, yeah.
And so would you think, looking back in these last 6 years, was this finding out your identity and making that connection and also being so accepted? Because again, chances are it could have gone poorly, but instead these last 6 years have been really affirming.
It has been affirming. I feel like I changed my last name to his. My stepdad gave me his last name, and I always knew he was my stepdad. I've never called him stepdad because since I was 3 years old, he was the one who like filled the role as a dad, and he recently passed away of cancer, and he was the one who helped me like during the time when I was seeking, and he was like, your mom knows the truth, and you're going to find out the truth, and he was encouraging me to, and when he found out about my dad and I meeting, he was just really happy. And so that made me feel good. I took my dad's name musically, Chris Beeland, but for my family, my wife and kids, they all have Chabot, my dad who gave me his name.
So for someone who was homeless for periods of time in his life and adrift without really a sense of foundation, now you have more fathering and more family than you probably ever imagined.
Yeah, my dad, he's a character. He spent 10 days in my house a couple weeks ago, and we played a few shows together, and we played inside of a church, and my dad's like, if they try to convert me or do any kind of weird stuff, he was like worried about it. He's like Irish Catholic, but he's like, I keep my religion to myself. And we drank inside of the car. We had these Dixie cups. It was one of my favorite moments, because here we are outside of a church with a bottle of wine, drinking out of Dixie cups before we go in and like just play music together. And it was a beautiful show. But he stayed in my house for 10 days, and we were able to get to know each other. And it's weird to see like parts of myself, you know, it's like DNA.
And someone who could have been a stranger had you not heard the story other ways. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today I've invited Chris Bieland in to be my guest just to share his story, because all of us have a beautiful story to tell. Some have much richer journeys than others, more wild twists and turns. But sitting and hearing the story of someone else can inspire us to look into our own stories and listen for those seminal moments or those milestones that we might not even recognize as being important, but absolutely contribute to the people we are today. No regrets. We're going to be opening up the phone line soon at 805-781-3875, and we'll be back to continue my conversation with Chris. Let's hear a little more music by Chris Bieland.
It's lonely when you fade away in a lifetime. And it's lonely when you're out in space with no lifeline. And slowly then you turn around, and you notice the length and the time when your heart stops beating. Oh, why won't you come settle down? Stop wasting your time and your mind going on believing. No, this won't change. Lord knows you know I can't tell where I'm going.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Our number is 805-781-3875. That song is called Last Prayer by Chris Bieland. And Chris, what inspired that song?
That song, after meeting my dad and meeting my family, who they're not Christians at all. They're like, they went to Catholics. My uncle they had some stuff with priests that happened to the family, and some horrible things with church and religion. And I think finding my dad also, it made me question everything else in life. And I was, at that time, I was a worship pastor of a church, and I only knew one worldview, and I looked through the world through a certain lens. And when I met my dad, I felt like it shattered him. And I started questioning everything. I compare it a lot like a sweater when you start pulling on the yarn. Mm. And you just keep pulling and pulling, and all of a sudden you just have a ball of yarn.
And you have to reconstruct the sweater, right?
Yeah. So that's that song, that's what that's about. I was deconstructing everything, and yeah.
And did you expect at the time that you met your father that you were going to do music full time? You know, was that always the intention, or did the process of meeting your dad, like, how did you find your way into really devoting your life to music? Because you were working in the medical industry, and it talked about becoming a nurse.
Yeah, well, I was a dialysis technician, and I was doing that for about 14 years. And one of my patients, her name is Kathy, and I made her a burn CD. Like, well, you know, we can make mixed CDs. Mm-hmm. I made her a CD of Death Cab for Cutie. And I said Death Cab for Kathy. I gave her this album. And she used to come to some of my shows, and it was just really great to see her. And one time she came to my show, and we were living in California. We moved back after, you know, I just, you know, that my whole faith crisis, or whatever you want to call it, my wife really wanted to be home near family, and so we moved back. And but I was doing a show in Bend, Oregon, and Kathy came to one of my shows and asked her how her kidney was doing, and she got a transplant like a few years earlier, and she told me it was failing, and she was going to be on dialysis by the summer. And it just came out of my mouth, and I've been a tech for 14 years, and I don't say things like this. I'm like, I'll give you my kidney. And she like took a step back. She goes, really? Well, I'll send you the information. Like, she was shocked as I was that I said it.
That you said it, that you offered it? Right, because over the course of 14 years, I'm sure you had hundreds of times you felt.
Yeah, I was putting 15-gauge needles in like 16-year-old girls, and like things that were just, you know, you'd give a kidney to any of them, but I just never really wanted, you don't just do that.
Right. So in this moment.
I say it.
Yeah.
It felt right.
Yeah.
And I can't explain it. And I was, at that time, an atheist too. I just wasn't like God told me to do it. I just felt like being a good human. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if that was the reason. But I said it, and I go back home, California, and I tell my wife what I did. We're just making dinner one night. I'm like, hey, I told this lady I'd give her my kidney.
I would have hit you with a pan.
That's what she wanted to do. She's Irish. And that look that she gave me was just like, you're crazy.
Save that kidney. One of our kids might need it.
She's like, you did not just say that. You can't just tell people you'll give them your kidney. And I'm like, well, why don't you pray about it? She said, I don't need to pray about it. No, you're not doing it. And I thought that was it, and then we went to bed that night, and she woke me up at like 2 a.m, and she was weeping and just saying that God told her that I'm supposed to do it and to get out of the way, and I told her, well, I haven't done a single test yet. We'll see. And from that point on, I went through all the hoops and did all the blood tests and the tissue matching, and we ended up being a super match, which is even further than being like a sibling or whatever.
Right, even a better match than blood relative.
So, I ended up going through with the surgery. And then it was right after that, I gave a kidney. I quit my job, and I decided I wanted to do what I love in this short life. And so music is when I jumped back into it.
So how has your life changed since committing fully to sharing the stories that you have professionally and full time?
It's changed in my peace of mind. I don't feel anxious as much. I feel more complete in what I'm doing on this planet. Even now, I'm working as a barista and doing music, but I really love coffee, so it doesn't feel like a work like job to me, except for getting up at 5 a.m. when you go to play a gig, it lasts till midnight.
Might as well just stay up and let the day continue.
But then you have espresso to help you out. But that's been a joy. And I think being out and seeing people and connecting with humanity is a good thing.
And last year, you actually played at Live Oak Music Festival with your daughter, Harmony, on the Hot Lick stage. So how was that? Because I know it was an early morning gig and you had a big crowd.
It was surprising. I was like, who's going to get up at this time in the morning and listen to music? That place was packed out. Like, everyone had their coffee in their hand, and there was just great energy in the room. And the band that played with us was just, they were spectacular. And it was a really fun morning.
And what's it like playing with your daughter?
I can't even describe it. It's like a piece of heaven every time we get to just sing together. I hear her voice with mine. It's just a great bonding experience. Mm-hmm. Then after the song's over, she gets back to being annoyed by me.
And because how old is she now?
She's 14.
Yeah, so the perfect time to find everything annoying.
Yeah, she wants an iPhone right now, and I'm like, maybe a flip phone. Let's do a flip phone first.
You're ruining her social opportunities.
Yeah.
And also, she's recording an album right now.
She is. And we just got funded for our Kickstarter goal, which I'm really happy. Well, we're $200 almost to reach the goal. But we're making an album with vinyl, and Yeah, these songs we've written together since she was 6 years old. So really looking forward to that.
So do you think at some point it'll be grandpa and dad and granddaughter? Can you envision the trio with your dad?
We already did that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. We just did that a couple weeks ago. So with the album, we're also releasing a live record that we did with my dad. So all three of us were on stage singing songs together, and it was that moment. It was like it just felt good.
So the kind of the theme of today's show is this idea of seminal moments in our life that kind of bring us to who we are today, and so that would be one of those kind of culminations, I guess, of your journey of kind of being a lost son to being a found son.
Yeah, that's true.
If you'd like to be part of the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. If you have a question for Chris or a seminal moment or milestone in your life you'd like to share. And I'd also like to hear more music from you, Chris, because I know you've been working on, I mean, you're always writing songs, I'd imagine. But you said that you have brand new music that you've got.
Yeah.
Do you think you could play a little bit of that song for us now?
Yeah.
I Could Fly, I think, is the name of that tune. I don't know if you have to tune up and get ready. And it's interesting because in your story, we forgot to add on that your son, who you had when you were 15 and a half, is now 24.
Yes.
And he's married.
Married with two kids. So I'm a grandpa twice.
Yeah. And how old are the grandkids?
Three and... Oh my gosh, I'm gonna get in trouble if he's listening right now. I think it's three and two right now.
And do they call you a special grandpa name?
Well, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah. He lives in Springfield, Missouri, and so I'm not around as much.
You haven't been able to claim your grandpa status yet.
I got to meet my granddaughter, Hazel, but I haven't met Roman yet. Yeah.
And so your new tune is I Could Fly.
Yes.
And what inspired this?
This one, I was just... I just had my guitar in my hand, and sometimes a melody will come with when I'm picking some notes, and then I just I started singing just whatever words came to my mind, and I try to sometimes when I'm writing a song I try to put people in the room with me, like John Lennon if he was sitting across from me, like. That's a good job. Keep doing it.
He's just staring at you, enjoying the groove. All right. Yeah. So your ode to John Lennon's inspiration.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Once there was a time when I could fly up where all the mountains touch the sky, where thoughts meander welcomed by the light. It's hard to notice. And maybe I was lost inside a dream where nothing's ever really as it seems. Halls of mirrors and grindings of machines, I can't explain this. It's where your eyes pierce through the dark like rays of sunshine on my heart. I feel like crying. A beauty beyond words to tell, past the gates and outer shell. And
that's Chris Beeland. New music, I Could Fly. Chris is a singer and a songwriter and a barista and a father and a grandpa and a husband. He's also a Live Oak performer last year on the Hot Lick stage and playing, I would imagine, all over the Central Coast. What are some of your upcoming gigs? Do you know off the top of your head?
Top of my head, this Saturday at Tribe Coffee House in Arroyo Grande, there's going to be a grant where I work. There's going to be a release, grand opening, And so Ragged Jubilee is going to play, Sean Clark, and Chris Chavez. And so there's going to be music all day and pizza and tacos and beer. And so that'll be a good place to see.
And what time is that going to be?
It starts at 1 o'clock, and I go on at 3. I'll be being a barista.
Until it's your time to go on.
Pretty much.
But isn't that a great humbling for musicians? You don't want to get too caught up in your ego or anything. It's
no.
Like, go back and wipe off the table, right. Make a latte, and then you can play a song.
That's right. Put your apron on first.
Exactly. Because I think you have to kind of stay in that space, right, for the creative
right.
flow to come. If you get too caught up in the performance or maybe in the stardom, mm-hmm. that you lose kind of that source of who you are.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen to me. And I think music is, it's not meant to be like American Idol and all of these things where we put people on pedestals, or it's just really, music is just a connection of humanity. We're able to, it's like a medium. I don't know what you would call it. Like, it's supposed to bring us together. It's not mm-hmm. supposed to put us apart and elevate people. Like,
right.
So when I play music, I try to make it where I'm connecting with people. If that makes any sense.
Well, when your words are your story and your truth, it's a vulnerability too, that you're kind of opening up, and the people who resonate with your story, your truth, are going to be your fans, I guess, right? Because they hear and see in you something that is true about them. So that's the connecting piece. Interesting that you work and play at Tribe Cosby House, because it's almost like you're creating your own tribe of fellow musicians or people who are seekers in the way that you are.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know now, as a grandpa, how are you as a father? How did you find out what it was like to really be a dad? How are you different?
I don't think there was like a moment where it just clicked. Mm-hmm. But there are these special moments where I look over at my kids and they respect me. My oldest, he's going back to Portland today, and just for him, not my oldest, my second oldest.
Okay.
Sorry. And he's a barista in Portland, works at two different coffee shops, and he looks at me and he loves me. I can sense it from him. I think there's those moments that you just know, like, okay, I know I screwed up a lot, but I still have their love and their respect. And my oldest son, even, like, I was 15 when he was born, and he realizes that. And so we have this connection. And I made a lot of mistakes, you know? I look back, like, time is, like, the most valuable thing you can have, you can spend with people. And I know I was gone a lot, and... what can you do? It's now.
But it's interesting because clearly you've found your way to where you are today from your experiences being parented and not being parented and having to find your way. Because, you know, ideally you grew up in a home and you model your choices after your parents, and then you become the adult based on what you saw them do. But clearly that wasn't an option for you. So you've had to kind of create this model of who you are as a father from the bits and pieces of good people that you met along the way.
Yeah, I think that's the best way of learning life. Like, that's why you need, does take a village. It takes many people that you learn from, you know?
And it might not be anyone you expected.
Right.
Just like you found in San Diego.
It's Lalo Rodriguez and his family.
Thanks to him.
Yeah.
805-781-3875 is our number. And Sean, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
We're great. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, I'm currently homeless, and I'm an artist and a writer, and so I've been listening to the whole conversation. I was just wondering if Chris had any words of advice or inspiration or how to deal with being a homeless person in a society that just doesn't like you and want you around, but you really want to be part of and be an integral part of.
Thank you, Sean. What do you think, Chris?
Well, Sean, as being homeless before when I was younger, like, I know what it's like to have doors slammed in your face, and you know, and to feel like you're just at the bottom of the barrel and you're never going to get up. But I just would encourage you that each day is a new day, and you might be homeless today, but tomorrow you don't know what the next day holds. And to keep your eyes up, man, like, to try to seek good people to give you advice. And there's people around you, there's good people, man, if you just if you just believe in it, you know, like. So I encourage you to, that would be my encouragement from you.
And are you a musician, Sean?
No, I'm a writer and a filmmaker. I've got a couple of films in short film festivals, and I'm currently finishing a novel right now.
So you are clearly walking your path.
Yeah. I've came from a very dysfunctional family, but both my parents were writers, so it's second nature for me to write. So my experience in life is all throughout my book.
It sounds a little bit like Chris finding that connection to his father in the music. You can't do anything other than write because it's in your blood so deeply.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering, yeah. I would think that there are communities of artists. I mean, I know that of all places, the Central Coast is full of support groups and writers' groups. How do you find each other? Is it through coffee shops? I mean, do you hang out at coffee shops? I'm just curious. Like, where do artists find each other?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think it is just going to the music scene. Like, where you look on, and just find where music's playing, and then you go there, and you just meet people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's as easy as that. Really, just getting out.
Yeah, I just came here a couple of months ago, so I don't really know very many people around here yet.
Yeah, Boo Boo Records, it's a good place to go to in SLO. Like, they have a lot of, they have a poster board, and there's bands are always coming through town, and there's always something happening. And, but I'd
also think Kreutzberg Coffee Shop, any of the more established coffee scenes. It seems like coffee shops are the place where people come to connect and find people of like-minded interests, and find the writers group. Go through New Times and look at the back of New Times for all the different groups that are meeting and supporting each other. Because I know that there are writers groups that meet all the time. Mm-hmm. I hope that helps, Sean. And I really appreciate you calling in because, you know, people, when they're homeless, the stories are not what you think. Mm-hmm. Your homeless citizen can be a writer, a novelist, an artist, someone who's just trying to find their way. And it's hard because life is so costly and expensive, and it's not easy to just jump in. Sean, thank you for taking the time to call.
Yeah, thanks, Sean.
Okay.
Thanks. Wow, what a cool call.
Yeah. So as a musician, you know, are you aware that your words and the work that you're doing touch people on a regular basis? I mean, are you able to sense that the impact you have on others changes lives? And are you comfortable with that?
That's a really beyond me question. I don't know. Like, I just want to be me and be the best version of it. But I really would hope that my music does something bigger and change lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's success look like for you now? You know, do you think about, I'll know I've made it when, or do you feel like you've made it now?
There's always both. Yeah, right now I feel like I've made it. I look around at my wife and my kids and living on the Central Coast, and I'm like playing music for a living, and I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And there's a song, an old country song called Satisfied Mind, and it says, money won't buy back money. Money won't buy back your youth when you're old, or a friend when you're lonesome, or love that's grown cold. The wealthiest person is a pauper at times, compared to the man with a satisfied mind. Mm. And I think about that, just being satisfied, and you've made it. So I would love to travel with music and play other places than bars and stuff.
become the vagabond musician, taking the show on the road.
Yeah.
Kids and wife and dog and van.
We got our passports too, so we're ready.
And it's interesting listening to Sean's phone call as well. I'm sure there's a lot of people that are wanting to be able to live their life in an authentic way, to have their stories and their thoughts and ideas be heard. And I would imagine you feel fortunate that you found a platform. But I'm not asking you to answer this, but I keep thinking about Sean. It's like, where are those platforms? You know, how did you find your way into getting your first gig or that first opportunity? You know?
Yeah, I think failure, you have to be willing to accept. It's not really failure, but just willing to accept that things don't just come easily to you. You don't, some people get handed success or handed things, but for me, like having to, work a full-time job, take care of a family, and record all my at night and record with low budget and just and to be able to give it all to your dream and pick up my instrument when I'm tired or whatever, so it takes like sacrificing and going out and doing things. Like for me, if I don't think I would have got a gig here if I didn't like go around to these wineries and give them my CDs, and so it just takes that, I think, a little bit of
perseverance,
yeah,
resilience, and knowing that if you've lived on the streets, you can pretty much do anything.
Yeah.
After that,
I used to hustle tamales. I used to sell those. I've ever trying to make it. Anyway,
Chris Breland, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh.
I've enjoyed your story. I've enjoyed your music. As always, you're a part of the conversation. If you'd like to join us on our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find Chris's music on iTunes, Spotify, at Boo Boo Records. Go in. They sell his CDs. As always, we appreciate you being a part of the conversation. We'll be back next week to continue our stories. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll go out with Hearts Like Chords by Chris Breland.
The flowers in bloom remind me of you and the morn. Follow the star, know which way you are, younger traveler. And I will walk with you, carry your lamp close to guide me. Our love's not destitute, our hearts are like chords intertwined. Be here tonight as I lay down beside the still water. Come out where you are, come out new and far, son and daughter. I'll give to you the secret of life and the meaning. 10,000s of voices ring true, our hearts are like chords intertwining. A song in my lips, may it be like a kiss you surrender to. The lavender soothes the deepest of wounds, voices call for you. If you take the moon from its place, the sky will roll back and be empty. down were erased. Our hearts are like cords intertwined. Twilight.